Hello, groomers. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi, Barbara. Hi, Chris. Hello, groomers. Welcome to episode 199 of the Groom Pod. This is recorded on February 10th in 2019 in Snohomish, Washington, Tucson, Arizona, and close to Madison, Wisconsin. This podcast is brought to you by listener support through Amazon and Patreon and through our kind sponsors, Best Shot, Show Season, Stazco, South Park, and Evolution Shears. Today, we've got an interview with Chris Pearson. This episode's brought to you by Stazco Products, featuring the famous Stazco Conditioning Spray. Find it online and at Groomers Mall and Ryan. All right, Barbara, tell me about your week.
I had a lot of different things happen this week, but one funny one. Max, the mystery mix, was back.
Remember
how much attention he got on the discussion group? Well, he came back for his second appointment, and so I asked his owner, well, how did you come up with that Max is a Chihuahua Catone de Tulliar mix? Because those are kind of, you wouldn't expect the ordinary pet owner to kind of create, to look at this lion dog and create that he's these two things. They wouldn't make that up.
Not in a million years.
So I'm thinking, you know, like, who told her this? Well, it turns out, Chris, she had a DNA test done. So this is the DNA results.
Wow.
You know, people were saying, well, I wish I had a DNA result of that. Well, guess what, folks? Catone de Tulliar and Chihuahua came up as a result of the DNA mix.
I'm blown away.
Isn't that something?
He's a cool looking dog.
Oh, he's funny. But you know, but here's a trip. Last visit, I just did the finish work, which obviously isn't too much. In fact, you know, I shaped the little eyebrows, which I thought was a wonderful little styling finish on the she didn't like it. She said, there's only two things I did to that dog. I trimmed its feet, I shaped its eyebrows, and I poofed it up with hairspray to be even more lionly. And, well, there was just one thing about last groom. Oh, no. What's that? The eyebrows.
That's crazy.
So this little dog has been a challenge on so many fronts because, first of all, he comes in looking like he's this big fucked up mess. He's got this giant lion head and he's got this big tail. And I'm thinking, oh boy, I got to fix this, right? I got to fix this. And the first thing she says is, I want you to leave him natural.
And of course, natural to us, right? I just go over and grab my blenders and I start shaping.
Yep. I don't want that. And I said, so the only thing they say was trim around the eyes because he was really overgrown. So I really liked what I did in the comeback. It's practically the only damn thing I did. Just one thing about last time that you don't need to do anything around his eyes. Well, I did do under the eyes, you know, I did it in the inside corners because you can't just let that stick into his eyes. But that was funny. So we did that. Then I had another lion dog this week. It was a Lhasa Apso, and it came in and it looked like it had a lion cut or it had its own hair mat coney.
Oh,
I like its own Elizabethan collar, like choking him, and from behind the head on the neck forward, he was just solid dreadlock, and with two boogery dreadlocks hanging off his muzzle, and I was prepared for this one because I had done some kind of lengthy conversation with both the husband and the wife. They contacted me because they inquired as to whether I would be willing to help them maintain a show coat on their Lhasa Apso.
That's this one?
It's this one.
It's female.
So, you know, like. No, I think I buried that. But in talking to the wife, I told the wife I thought it was a pretty bad idea. But what happened was that when the Lhasa went through, he's a year old. He went through change of coat, which Lhasas do, and it's a crisis period for all pet owners because they met so easily during. Well, it quote got away from us. It got away from them about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
The dog got all dreadlocked out. They took it to pet something. And what happened was that they, right away, they just started shaving it down, right? So they went from like the withers back. Well, they go up to go around the neck and the dog growled and they stopped. No more. That was it. Growled once, you're out of here. And explained to the people that that was their company policy. And I really. And so then the wife tried to cut out some of the mats on the top of its head. It had this kind of flat head because she had successfully chopped off the entire crown of the Lhasa, only leaving the dreadlocked ears sticking straight out. I would have taken pictures, but, you know, I don't like to shame my customers. And she explained to me over the phone that even though he didn't want anything done around his face, he was a very loving dog.
Sure, lady.
But no, seriously, I listened to her because she repeated this theme about how huggable and lovable and he was a good boy, but he had this one thing that he wouldn't let you touch his face. So I heard that and I said, I'll try. Let's see what we can do. So Yvonne and I teamed up. My little Mexican lady assistant is fearless. And even though I was being very, I wasn't too sure whether I wanted to go near that. First I sat down side by side with the owner and watched him on the leash and gave him an opportunity to kind of come around and smell me. He didn't want anything to do with me. If I put my hand down, even if it had a treat in it, he gave it a funny look. I was a little bit wary, and I had already prearranged in this case to have the owner stay. Because I wanted the owner to witness every single thing that happened with me and that dog. And because of the way she described the dog's temperament, I wanted her to be there to be able to give the dog some reassurance and not just dump him off with strangers. You see, one thing I know about this breed, Lhasa Apso, is that it's even in the breed standard that they are wary of strangers. They were bred to guard. They're the indoor guardians of the temples of Tibet, and they were bred to be a little alarm dogs, kind of like Marco.
Okay.
Right? You know, you got to be family to be loved. So I wanted to have her extend her familial tie to the dog, to me.
That makes great sense.
And I had her stay. And she was good. I only had to shush her a couple of times. And actually, I shushed her because when he started snapping at us as we had to get up around the eyes and face, I had no problem getting the cone of shame off of him because I went from the back forward with my 10 blade setting on a practically silent trimmer, right? And I just was able to really knock all of that stuff off. So then we were stuck with the actual muzzle and ears. The ears came off and then he started snapping a little bit. But, you know, it wasn't targeted snapping. So what I'm trying to say is that there's so much more levels of communication from these pets to us. And a growl is certainly a suggestion that trouble might occur if you were to proceed, right?
I always take it as the dog requesting me to be extra careful. Be extra careful because something is going on. In this case, you've got matting in places where you don't know if there's a mass or a wart under there, except for it's a young dog. But there's something that's gone on in the process that has made him nervous. So I always honor that growl with not necessarily immediately snapping on a muzzle or immediately clamping down the dog's grip. Yeah. I just take it as a please be cautious at what you're doing, lady, because I don't even know you and you're about to take things next to my face.
You know, Yvonne came right up as I was starting to handle him on my table. Yvonne came up right up. She went gently right to his head and she held his head against her and she petted top of his head and around his eyes and between the eyes there. And then she likes to take her fingers and she pets under the eyes. And she all the time, kind of little grandma cooing, talked to the dog, you know. And he melted underneath her touch. I watched my little old untrained, poorly coached because she doesn't take coaching, assistant just went over this special needs Laza Opso. And, you know, we got it all done. It wasn't anything you'd want to take a picture of. It was pretty rough, but I got all the crap off of his face, and I was able to trim it so at least it was about the same length sticking out of his face as the both sides. And I, you know, like I quit right there. I did kind of brush out his backside and I trimmed his feet and I did his pads and I did under the tail, and that was it. I did not wet bathe the dog. I did not dry the dog because I decided that we had a success. I declared it a success, and I didn't want to push the dog with any further confrontations.
So do you have him scheduled to come back in?
No, but he will. He will. And BTW, for that about an hour's work, I charged $80 and got a tip.
Very nice.
So, you know, like, so that was a part of my inner conversation was, okay, now this is valuable, what I just did. And of course, the woman was amazed. She was like totally amazed at our process, at the way that we operated with her dog, the way that we had her there, the way that we got the job done. So she was ready.
This totally ties into our discussion from last week where we were talking about discussing behavior with the owners and do you let the owners see? And I know for a fact, Chris lets all the owners see their grooming, don't you, Chris?
I do. The live stream video grooming is, people are eating it up. Yes.
I like it. I watch.
Do you?
Yeah,
I assume for groomers it's probably like paint drying and it's the pet owners love it. They love being able to see their pets get groomed, and I appreciate it because if I do have someone that is weary or has a couple of red flags, it lets me feel a little more safe because they can watch exactly what happened. There's little room for blame in that situation, and so far, I mean, it could go badly for me, but so far it has not.
Tell me and our listeners not only where we can find you doing that, but where's your camera? How do you have your camera set up?
My camera's just my phone, and I bought like a $7 tripod on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And it sits up at the front of my grooming salon, so it gets in my table and my workstation and most of my tub because my place isn't very big.
So this is like a standing up tripod, not just a little tabletop one, but one that goes on the floor?
Nope, it's one that clips with a foot and a half long arm on it.
Oh, so what do you have it clipped to?
My counter. They can see it, though, when they come in. And I did hang a big sign. I hate signs in the grooming salon. I don't like signs. But I hung a sign that says audio and video recording in process at all times so that everybody knows. And if I have new people, I do mention it to them when they come in so everyone has a heads up. And like I said, if anything were to go badly, there could be bad things that could happen to me as a business owner that, you know, is doing live streaming. But so far, you know, everyone's really, really supported it. If I had someone that didn't support it, I wouldn't do it. I just would shut the camera off, you know.
I've never caught you doing this, but do you ever find yourself singing and then you realize that everyone is watching and you could have hundreds of people listening to you sing?
I have sung a couple of times and I turned around after I realized it and my camera had shut off. So far I'm still good. I love to sing. They're a captive audience. So yeah.
Listen, I had the newspaper came and photographed me singing to the dogs and wrote me up as the singing dog groomer.
Oh, wow.
And people called me and said, just what kind of songs are you singing to these dogs? You know,
like, people are so funny.
People are so funny. I said, she wanted a playlist.
Oh,
I mean, you know, like, is it Christian or not? You know? Oh. And I was a blues singer. I said, no, I'm singing dirty right. blues. What the hell?
Right. I don't care.
Rock me, baby.
Groomers, we all know that the first thing doggy moms and dads do when they pick up their beautifully coiffed babies from us is they go in for a cuddle, right? That first cuddle is so important because it gives them the opportunity to really enjoy their freshly groomed and sweet-smelling pups. Well, our friends over at South Bark Professional Pet Products have a new item that's sure to bring a smile to all of those pet parents and groomers, too. South Bark, as you know, is the originator of the now famous South Bark's Blueberry Facial. They are located in sunny San Diego, California, where founders Lisa Vella and Donna Walker, also known as the Blueberry Girls, operate a dog wash and consumer pet store, as well as a wholesale distribution center. These amazing ladies have come up with an entirely new product that really has us here at the Groom Pod excited. It's a foaming cleanser with a fabulous new fragrance. It smells like blueberries and coconut, two of my personal favorite smells. I can't wait to try it. It's good for slobber mouth, goober eyes, and strategic stinkiness. The real neat thing is that you don't have to rinse it out. And to top it off, it's a foam, so it's extra safe for using around the eyes. You know how much Barbara and I love foam for faces. South Bark's Blueberry Coconut Pet Foam comes in a generous 8.5 ounce foamer and is safe for use on dogs, cats, puppies, and kittens. This is sure to be a favorite in shops as a retail item or in the bathing room for pre-washing faces and loosening those eye boogies. If you would like more information or to place an order, you can go to the website www.southbarkprofessionalpet.com or you can call them at 1-877-232-2235. And remember to look for the Blueberry Girls and their products at many of our grooming trade shows and seminars. Well, I want to bring up about the dryer explosion.
Oh, thingy. Yeah. Follow up
on the dryer thing. I talked to Andis. And they wanted all the pieces of the dryer back because they said this is not a common problem. It was unusual. Unfortunately, I had a dog poop that day and I collected up the bits and pieces and threw them in the garbage can. And I was not digging through that dog poop in there to find all those bits and pieces. I have the housing. I have the picture of the exploded parts on my floor. Although, as I mentioned last time, the pieces of the plastic were actually in my bathtub and underneath my mats. That's how much energy was in the back of the dryer. But they were insistent upon sending me a new dryer, one that's comparable to the one that was given to me it was given to me. So here's the interesting thing. Barbara, you're 100% right. That's a human use dryer. There's nothing different about it at all. Even the lady on, completely just a human use dryer with different marketing packages, but you know, different box basically. And so I thought that was kind of a telling, but they were very honest about it. They didn't try to hide that fact.
What the heck? What else?
Yeah, I don't know what else.
It's like, okay, so somebody on one of the groups is talking about that she's sure that ingredient testing, you know, because I was saying that hair science had shown da-da-da. She was sure that ingredient testing was done by shampoo manufacturers, as if nobody else in the world uses sodium lauryl sulfate. The cosmetic use of this is almost always the ingredients have a much broader application, and we're just some little submarket off to the side with a picture of a puppy on it, you know?
Like the human use dryer.
Like the dryers. It's a dryer. It's a handheld.
That we all want to be special, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I will make sure that all my stuff has pictures of puppies on it. Especially when I start my video, because I want to do that, Chris.
All right.
I definitely am going to accept their dryer with open arms.
Oh, yeah, good. Good for them, at least.
Yes. And that's all I want, because I was not injured. I could have been injured, but I wasn't. Neither was the dog, nor do I have damages from PTSD, nor did I need to spend extra time cleaning up. I mean, there really was no damages for me other than the little cuts on my face. I'm not a litigious person. I kind of think it's a crappy thing to do, so I wouldn't do that. Besides, I'm a brand loyal person to Andis. I use Andis clippers exclusively, not because they pay me, hint, hint, but because I believe in their products, and they've always been good to me as far as being a workhorse of my personal grooming day. I do, however, have concerns that the dryer they're sending me will probably be the same design, as in the back of it might have a filter on it or it might not, but I'll know that that fan is oriented in exactly the same way. So Chuck pointed out that the Yellowbird dryer from Conair, actually, I talked about it last week, has the dryer fan facing a different direction, maybe be a little bit safer than the Andis dryer, but I'll look at it and I'll make a judgment. I did already order that Yellowbird dryer, but nobody can deliver anything here at my house because I'm snowed in. So in case you guys don't know or don't follow me on Facebook personally, I don't remember how much I shared on the Groom Pod list, but I've been here for 8 days in my house. 8 days. And we now have 11 inches of snow. We got another 4 inches. So there is no escaping here in sight. I've got a big hill to get down. It just isn't happening. And I've had to restrain myself because all I've done so far is sit here and bake and cook and bake and cook. And then, of course, you have to eat what you've baked and cooked, right? I could run out of food. I'm in a serious bad. I could run out of things like sugar and flour. Luckily, I have chickens, although it's not like they're making a lot of eggs right now. But I'm going nuts here. You would think I would be doing the things that I should do. Like I have to get the advertising campaign contract set up for this next year. I should be writing new ads. I've got all kinds of things that I should be doing. But no, I'm baking. I'm making cookies and cinnamon rolls and spaghetti sauce and chicken soup. And then I'm eating all of that. I'm really concerned. So we should probably get on to the meat of the show, though. We shouldn't just hang around here and chat about our exciting lives, although, you know, that's kind of what this is about. Let me give you just a moment of my time to talk about a really cool company who is a sponsor for us. And that company is Best Shot. Best Shot is really near and dear to my heart. And I want to let everyone out there know that they have done kind of a rebranding of the mission statement of the company and their feeling towards product use and their feeling towards ingredients specifically. And I just really am behind their reassessment of their focus and sharing that with the public. And if you guys haven't been to their website, it's bestshotpet.com, and it is worth going and taking a look. They've rewritten their mission statement. They've got a whole section under No More where they talk about their focus as a vendor for the industry, and they are a good vendor. They're really thoughtful about how they market their products, how they formulate their products, and how honest they are about what's in there. Now they even put up their ingredients. They were a little slow on that, but they are now way in the forefront with this reformulation of their focus. So if you guys want to support us, you can do so by supporting our very big sponsor, number one from the beginning, bestshotpet.com. There we go.
Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment.
Chris, we've dragged you here for like a bunch of different reasons, but primarily to talk about the big meeting we had and the big meeting we're going to have, but there's so much more to you. So I figured we'd start from the beginning, just kind of like we did with Mary. Why don't you tell us, so what was your childhood like? Where were you born? What were your parents like? What were your pets like? That kind of stuff.
I grew up in Chopier, Wisconsin, which is a really tiny little farming community outside of Beloit, Wisconsin, so right on the border of Illinois. And I grew up on a family farm, so I had horses, and we had chickens every spring that we had for meat and eggs. We had pigs for a while, and my grandma always had dogs. We always had dogs. I got set on a milk crate at quite a young age and told to do hand stripping, and my grandma was a true terrier person, wonderful woman of the earth, but she was a terrier person. She was pretty hard-nosed about some things, and I learned to do things the right way the first time as much as possible, but I grew up with dogs. We always had dogs, and being on a farm, you know, we had wild animals sometimes that we'd have to help take care of and re-release, so I grew up with animal immersion from the get-go. I have a younger brother that's 9 years younger than me that we never got along as we were when we were little, but we're really close now. And he would help with dog chores and help with dog grooming. And I've always had animals in my life, always.
Did you do any of the 4-H stuff or Future Farmers of America or any of those things?
I did FFA in high school, but I didn't do any 4-H. I did shows. I had a pony and a half Arab, half quarter cross that I did some showing with in halter class and some trail classes, but nothing too serious. We just plunked around. You know, I was always on my horse's back or laying in the pasture, reading a book or something with my horse.
Did I ever tell you, Susie, that I was a 4-H leader?
No.
I was a 4-H leader for several years for dogs. And I even served on the board of directors. And I had a huge falling out with them. Because it was during the late 70s when I was a diehard, hardcore feminist activist.
She was in it.
And I was in the movement, man. And these issues kept coming up. And I kept trying to move the board to a more inclusive sort of a position. And we were editing and rewriting some of the bylaws and that kind of stuff. And we had words in there like the president he shall and the treasurer she will, you know, and I tried to neutralize those terms, and those people laughed me out of there. They laughed at me and laughed and demeaned me and made fun of me and sabotaged me and made me look like shit. And I quit them, you know, like I lived through it and I moved on. I did not stay in that battleground because it was just like hopeless. But okay, you mentioned 4-H, so there it's my 4-H story.
I wanted to be in 4-H, but I was never really close enough to any 4-H groups to do it because I was more of a city girl. But when I became a groomer and finally got some connections, I was asked to judge the dog grooming for 4-H at the fair here at our Washington State Fair. Cool. It was horrible. I stressed. I worried. I mean, it was awful. The
the parents of the kids fought my decision. Yes. It got very ugly. I just felt I never did it again. I ran. I never opened the letter. I never called them back. It was awful. It was very traumatic.
How sad. It's supposed to be fun for those kids. You know, I've groomed a few 4-H dogs for kids that had 4-H projects and wouldn't do it themselves.
I have two of those right now, a sheep doodle and a golden doodle that are the kids' 4-H projects that I cleaned up before the fair.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't know I was cleaning them up before the fair, but that's what I did. But alas, I digress. Anyway, so when did you decide that you perhaps wanted to groom? Did you have any other careers before grooming?
Did I have any other careers? I was a waitress for about 4 hours and left on my lunch break and never went back because the truckers were pinching my ass and I had enough of that. See, what else did I do? God, that's I bartended. I always liked bartending because I grew up with people in my family that they drank. We live in Wisconsin. They were drinkers. And I always was really casual and comfortable about having really good conversation with people who, were under the influence. And there's a lot of great conversation you can have with people when all of their guard is down.
I myself was really good at having conversations when I was under the influence. So I get it.
Yeah. Oh, and then I did have a pet store briefly, and that was a learning experience, let me tell you. But then, so I took a walk-in job at it was like a high volume grooming salon. And I just took a walk-in job. I started within a couple of days, had no experience other than I told them we had family dogs that I had groomed. And they took me in and I learned on a clipper vac system. So once I left there, I had to pretty much relearn everything all over again, but it was really high volume. I got my first really bad dog bite there from a German Shepherd that, looking back on it now, I'm surprised I didn't get hurt worse. I feel real bad for the dog. But yeah, so I learned a ton there. Some of it was what not to do. And that was my first grooming job, was while I was still in school.
Well, that's interesting. So you learned with a clipper vac, which I did as well, but they also made me groom without the clipper vac. So I had to learn both ways. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have to reteach myself other stuff when I finally left. Man, that would be a challenge.
Yeah, it was rough going. And you know, we didn't have, like, I hear Barbara, I had never clipped with clip-on combs. I didn't have curved shears. They were around a few years into my career, so I tried them out, but it was a real learning curve to not have that clipper vac system on my clipper when I started doing it again at a local pet store. So
yeah, I immediately bought a clipper vac. There was So I've always had one. That and a recirculating bathing system are two things that I started with back in 1998 that were just both pretty new at that point, and I've had them ever since, and I can't even imagine. Although I always have severe anxiety if I'm out and my equipment breaks and I'm away from home and my backups are all at home. I have to do something without my clipper back or without my bather. Oh, yeah, I freak out. Yeah. Oh, I do. All right. So you started in shops. When did you go off on your own?
Let's see. I think I had my first place when I was preggers with my twins. So that was 2001 or 2002 was my first place. I've had, I think 4 or 5 independent shops throughout the years that I've worked on my own. I worked at a vet clinic briefly. That did not work out well. And I've worked pretty much everywhere except mobile. I have not done mobile. I did 9 years between both of the major pet somethings as a groomer, a manager, a training, like an academy manager or academy instructor, and then a regional services training manager, and then back to a groomer. I took a demotion when I got pregnant. And then moved out of that and onto my own thing from there. So been kind of just chugging along doing my own thing since.
Which came first, the teaching or the fascination with hair?
The teaching came first. Kind of teaching and learning. Yep, yep. Hair's been something since about 2012 that I've started to really feed my mind with.
Yeah, because you and Barbara really share that passion. I'm kind of more of I absorb it
through osmosis as I'm learning all this. It wasn't a fascination, but now I'm in with both feet. You know, if you listen to this podcast long enough, you eventually kind of pick up the bug about the whole ingredient thing. And you're doing a lot of educating, just like Barbara, just like we are here, about ingredients and the structure of hair. And I recently saw on Facebook some out of this world drawings that you had done. Those are freaking awesome. I have never seen anything other than actual pictures of hair that look quite like that.
Thank you. Yeah, it was snowing, so, you know, I had to do something. But no, I love drawing and have always been doing something with art, whether it's drawing or painting or textiles or something. So, it kind of comes naturally. I had to do some new diagrams for my book, and it's really, really hard to find any of that on the internet to draw from. Things that are, you know, physiologically based or scientific fact-based diagrams, medical stuff. It can be really hard to find that unless you have time to dig and sift through a lot of useless things that seem helpful at the time, and sometimes they're just not. So I thought by doing that and putting that out there that I'd be putting out some goodness, and whoever needs it, there you go. You got it.
So what is the book going to be about?
It is, it's a second edition of the Caring for the Canine Coat. So it's a course guidebook that goes along with my certified canine esthetician program, but it's also sold freestanding. And it's just a guidebook on everything that we kind of encounter in the grooming salon when it comes to canine skin and hair coat. It doesn't delve into felines. I would love to learn more about cats, but I just have put so much work into learning about dogs. I can't imagine starting over again. I have a lot of respect for my feline groomers. I do groom cats, and I just get through it as quietly and carefully and quickly as I can. But it's literally a whole other animal. So the book doesn't get into cats very much, but it covers canine skin and hair coat physiology, the different tools we use in the grooming salon and what to look for and what to try to accomplish with them. It delves a little bit into topical ingredients and their purpose. It goes into how to create a care program for each pet. There's a flow chart about if you see certain conditions or certain symptoms that come in, what to look for and what type of products to use. None of the book and none of the course, the certification course, are brand reliant at all. So throughout the entire course, I'm teaching fact-based and physiological facets of the canine skin and coat without saying to anyone that attends, you want to grab this product or that product. I may say you want a benzoyl peroxide shampoo for this type of symptom, but I don't tell them what brand. So I believe personally, any of our education should not be product sponsored, if you will. It should be freestanding so that you have, as a groomer, you have an opportunity and a right to choose what brand you affiliate yourself with instead of the other way around. I mean, all education is important, I believe, all of it. Brand-sponsored education should be, I think, a facet of your education, but it should be a starting point. Like, you want to keep going so that you know, if you're out of a certain product, what else you could use in that situation. Because if you do run out of something, then you're kind of stuck.
I want to second that last thing, because that's something that I've really noticed about myself lately, is that I can just go, like they say, there's so many ways to skin the cat. I can just, like, I can approach a crisis of lack of a certain product real easily, because I can just say, oh, we'll get this and then that, and or you can use that. You know, like my bather, she runs out of one thing and, oh, no.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't know how else to get to her result. And she's very product loyal in that way. But I, on the other hand, say, oh, you could do this or you could do this, that, you could put that. And I wasn't, in the beginning of my career, I was never able to do that. That really comes with extended education. And it's one of the real, real benefits of I'm so glad that we have you. There's product sponsored and there's product based. you know, product sponsored. Some seminars are sponsored by, like, Best Shot does pretty much a lot of factual information, and they happen to be a sponsor. On the other hand, there are other companies that you have to use their products to get the result that they're educating you about. And that's what I call product-based. And right. It's really infomercial education, and which is not to say that the products don't work when they're used with their information, but it's not going to teach groomers how to survive without that particular line of product.
Exactly. And it's not, I mean, I don't mean to discredit anyone's hard work, because having done the educational facet of it, I know how much you have to put into your program, how much work it takes to get that info and to get yourself up there and share that with people. So not to discredit that at all. But to me, when I want to go and get an education about something, I don't want to be told, okay, pick up this and use it this way. I want to be told what's in it, what I'm looking at, why I want to use it, and then be able to choose what I want to put on that situation or use within that situation. It's liberating to be able to understand why something you're using works the way it does, so that you can use whatever you want. And it helps your bottom line. I mean, you can find high-end products and mid-range products and low-end products with similar formulations that the price tags vary greatly on. So you're able to take that money and invest it in your education and decide for yourself which products you want to use. That's my opinion. I mean, everyone can do their own thing, but that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I want people to be able to choose what they want.
So tell us about the certification class itself. Is it it's a 2-day class or a 1-day class?
It's 2 days.
It's two days?
Yeah, it's a lot of information. So it starts out with physiology of the canine skin and hair coat, and then we move through chapter by chapter through the book. There's no written testing. I'm not a big advocate of written testing when it comes to certification, because I think that groomers in general don't test well on paper. And I don't want to have anyone at a disadvantage or be put off by approaching the program out of fear of taking a written test. So there's no testing involved. The certification is given on site upon completion of class on the second day. And yeah, it's just a lot of lecture, a lot of Q&A. We do, in certain situations, we have had on-site labs where I've gone into the grooming salon and looked at what they're using, what they work with, and help them design. Right. Help them design ways to take their current business and add caring for canine skin and coat into their current grooming regimen. So they don't have to totally dismantle everything. It's actually an add-on way to really care for the pets that are coming in. And there's been people that have come through the course that have owned salons, and they've gone back and added employees just specifically to be estheticians who check pets in. They assess what they see in front of them. They create a care plan. They schedule with the client, and then that gets passed on to the bathers and passed on to the stylist. So there's a lot of potential here. And there's so much potential because you're not saying you have to buy these things or use this equipment in order to achieve this end result. We all get from point A to point B in 5,000 different ways. You know, and as long as everyone's safe and the dogs are happy and the groomers are doing well, it doesn't matter to me as an educator how anyone gets from point A to point B.
I love that. So you've got a thing coming up in Portland. It's really soon. I think that one's sold out, or maybe only had 2 seats left or something.
Yep, it's sold out. But I got a couple of gals that they moved their schedule. So I have 2 seats open right now. Yep.
Great. And when is that coming up?
That's February 16th, 17th, and 18th. Or 17th and 18th is my class. The workshop, the Western Sharpeners workshop, starts on the 16th. And they're going to have Michelle Evans. So I'm so excited to get to spend some time with Michelle.
Oh, I'm jealous.
I know, right?
Yeah, she's a good friend of the podcast. We love Michelle. Where else are you doing this?
I'm looking at some classes through spring closer to here. So Chicagoland area through spring, and then maybe at Mardi Gras Pet Expo. I'm just trying to talk to Christy and see if that's going to work out in May. And then in summer, I'll be further south. So I'll probably be down in St. Louis area and in Eastern, in Indiana area through the summer.
Cool. If people want to actually host you, how do they get a hold of you?
You can find me all over Facebook. I'm on Facebook way too much. So you can approach me on there via message. You can email me off my website. My website is www.chrissertzel.com. And they can email me on there. All I do is I try to usually have it at a salon if I can, because that helps the salon owner by getting people in there, and it keeps costs down, and it helps to kind of promote their staff to get them involved in that program too. So, yeah.
I love that idea. Okay, we're going to take another quick break here. Then we will be back to talk about the big meetings that have been going on, our big meetings. Dun, dun, dun. Our hands are money makers. We rely on them. How long we last in this career is dependent on how well we care for our hands. Evolution shears were engineered to be the most ergonomic shears out there. They were designed by a team of groomers, sharpeners, and medical professionals with comfort in mind. They started with the observation that all hands were not created equal. In fact, they are all unique and have different needs. Evolution shears are fully customizable with adjustable sizing and your choice of fixed ring, single, or double swivels. I recommend the double swivels. They're my personal favorites. Evolution shears work with your thumb in its natural position, making scissoring in all directions a pleasure. They are made to prevent repetitive stress injuries that occur due to scissoring and keep you from grooming. Lastly, they use high-quality materials but are affordable. They come in curves, straights, thinners, and chunkers, and in a variety of lengths and edges. A good thing for those of us with scissor addictions. There is a learning curve, but don't worry. The staff at Evolution will hold your hand through the whole process. Their customer service is tip-top. You can put your hands on a pair of Evolution shears and say hi to Abby, Ron, and our favorite salesperson, Chris Anthony, at many of the grooming shows. But if you're in a hurry, and you should be, go online to evolutionshears.com or call them at 877-560-3057 and buy yourself a pair or two. Be sure to ask for Chris, because she'll take great care of you. But wait, if you act now, okay, you don't have to act right now, but mention the Groom Pod when you place your order, or put Groom Pod in the coupon code on the Evolution website, and you will receive $10 off each pair of shears. How cool is that? So the talk of legislation is in the air. Actually, it's blowing through the air at a rate of speed that's astronomical at this point. States are trying to push through legislation everywhere, and we are trying to not have the legislation be written by non-groomers, or at least unaffected by groomers. We're finding that legislators write all kinds of legislation, but most of them have never groomed a dog. So when they put this stuff together, they really don't know how our industry works at all. So Chris, you and a bunch of others got together fairly recently online, members of all different states, organizations, or up and coming organizations, or interested parties, and you had a big meeting. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was great. It hit the ground running. I didn't think that there was going to be that type of response. So I was really happy that I saw that many people get out there and get involved. But what we're doing is creating a national alliance, if you will, so that we are networking and helping to network between the states so that everyone can hopefully get on board with a state grooming association. Our efforts are going to be to help get schools and educational programs involved in networking state to state and on a national level. And each of the locales within each state that may have what I like to call sister groups, so that, say, you've got different counties within the state, they can have sister groups in their area that are state grooming association based. So they feed into, they funnel into the main state. The main state funnels into a region, and then the regionals funnel into the national. So it kind of helps to just really create a tighter net of staying on top of things, you know, because this stuff pops up. And if you don't stay proactive and vigilant in keeping an eye on things, that's when bad things can happen. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. We've had a lot of people that are gratefully able to undertake things like website design and getting the word out and a logo and stuff that I, when I did the state association, was just kind of in my lap to get through as quickly as I could. So I've been very grateful that everyone's came forward the way they have to support. I think it's going to be a great thing. We our states need state grooming associations. Whether you want to be involved or not, just to have that there if you do need them is tremendous towards our industry integrity, I think.
Okay, I just want to make sure that our listeners understand that we're talking about legislation restricting and grooming licensing and being held
regulated.
Thank you. What we mean by bad things can happen if you don't stay tuned in is that your state or your local area might pass regulations affecting how you do business, what you're able to do that might not work for groomers in real life, because sometimes they're modeling from models of occupations that aren't sufficiently similar. So that's what bad things can happen means, is that you can find yourself suddenly legally required to have no cages for every animal, or certain kinds of cages, or water in every cage, or, you know, like, stuff can happen. So this is why we want to have a better network of groomers that are telling each other what's coming on down the pike, you know.
Right.
I think that the legislative bodies have a tendency to borrow from other states. And what's happening in, say, New Jersey will then be borrowed in California and borrowed in Texas and borrowed in all these other places. And if we have a grooming association that can at least communicate with the legislative body and influence some of this stuff as it goes along, then we don't get surprised with some of these things like, oh, you can't use a heated dryer. Well, that language is pretty specific. You can't use a heated dryer. It doesn't necessarily say a heated cage dryer. Right. It says a heated dryer. You could end up not being able to use a handheld heated dryer to straighten poodle ears, yeah. You know, because they don't understand us.
Right. Right. No, our industry for a long time has been kind of classically divided, and we kind of keep to ourselves. And those days are, they're coming to an end, you know, that saying, the times they are changing. It's in everyone's best interest to nurture their client relationships by supporting other groomers. And I know that it can sound like it's not connected, but it really, really is. I mean, you're investing in your integrity as a freestanding business if you're also investing in supporting your other area groomers that are also proactive within the industry. And it will help to create a baseline eventually so that certain groomers can't just set up shop and call themselves a professional. It will help with standardized education that's offered towards our industry. Only good things, even though I know it can seem really scary. No one wants to be told what to do or how to do it on average. But there are times when just coming to an agreement on what's obviously not okay is a really good starting point, right?
Right.
We do want to stop stuff like that. We do want to have some regulation. We don't want it to be over-regulation. We want to have some influence on it. So along the process, we had this big online meeting, which I watched the whole thing, by the way. It was fascinating.
Awesome.
But we want to get together in person. And Joey Villani stepped up and mentioned that perhaps at Intergroom, there could be a room available for this. And I think that's happening, isn't it?
I think it is. It sounded like they were trying to nail down the date and time, and there's going to be one. Todd has said that we can have a meeting at the All-American Grooming Show as well. So I'm super excited to be able to get together. It'd be neat if we could do something East, Midwest, and West. That would be a great starting point if we could just get some stuff going in each of those regions and then let it filter and funnel in and create that net that we're working on. So,
Barbara, do you have anything you want to add or ask Chris? Because we've hit an hour.
Oh, no.
Really?
We did it again. I had a feeling we were sliding. sliding towards that. Yeah, that's darn.
It's too fascinating to talk to people who do the same thing we do. I mean, Barbara and I get off on talking to each other every week, but then throw a third person in the mix, and boy, we really get to jamming.
Right. It is my jam. I love talking to other groomers. Love it.
This has been a lot of fun. That to all of the other things that Chris is doing, she and I are also both on the board of directors of the Association for Holistic Pet Professionals.
Yes.
And that association has a very deep commitment to providing important extended education to groomers outside of the current trade show system. So we're together in that. And, you know, Chris and I are on the same page on a lot of things. And I kind of see her as one of the fabulous women who are going to take some of my stuff and move forward with it as I wind down or at some point I'm no longer with you.
I'm not hearing that. La, 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 la. My ears. No, not happening. All right. And Chris, you can find her on Facebook. You guys all know where to find us. You can find us at the discussion group page on Facebook. That is Facebook.com/group/groompod. Also, thank you for supporting us on Patreon and for buying stuff from Amazon through our website and for giving us donations and for just being here and listening every week. We're 7,000 strong. It's pretty exciting. I love that. And yeah, let's do it again next week. What do you say?
All right. I'll be here.
Chris, you don't necessarily have to be here.
I won't. I would do it.
I'm sure you'll be back.
Yes.
We had too much fun.
I appreciate being here at all. Thank you very
much. Love you, Chris. Okay.
Okay, everybody. Happy grooming. See you here next week. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye, groomers. Take care.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.